Probably the most requested topic that I've received from you guys since I've returned is you guys want me to talk a little bit about how my new experiences, my newfound realizations have changed the way that I view things, the way that I perform various practices, and whether I still believe the same things now that I believed 6 months ago or a year ago or 2 years ago. I can easily come up with one of these cop-out answers where I would certainly hope not, right? Because you should never be the same person moment to moment. You're a never-changing organism. There's constant input and output being presented to you in the way that you interact with other people, the way you interact with technology, with social media, with friends, with families, with coworkers, with events that happen around the world. And so you should never be the same person. If you're the kind of person that's kind of stuck in the same attitude, the same belief, the same exact way of understanding something that you have for the past year or 5 or 10 or 20, then chances are you don't understand what it is that you actually believe. You're simply holding on to a set of rules given to you by somebody else in the hopes that it's true, because it seems to make sense. So, of course, the cop-out answer is, of course not. But the real answer is actually much more complicated than that. Because through the experiences that I've had this year in particular, so over the past 6 months or so, my worldview has really cemented itself as what I thought that it could possibly be. And so this is something that I've talked about quite a bit on the podcast over the past year or so that this podcast has been going on. This idea of knowing something and understanding something, the idea of concept and imagination, of concreteness, of truthiness, of isness itself. Now, it might surprise some of you to learn that I haven't done a single minute of meditation in over 6 weeks. I know, I can hear the gasps now. Unbelievable. You talk about meditation all the time. How could you not be meditating? The reason is very simple. The reason for that is that sometimes when we try to find our way through this world in understanding who we really are, we can sometimes get bogged down by what other people think, what other people feel like we should do. And I'm not going to make this a rehash of the previous episode. Go listen to that. Go find the multi-part series I did on authority many, many months ago to give you some idea of what I'm talking about if you have no idea. But one thing that I noticed is that in many regards, when we're trying to find our way, as the saying goes, we sometimes use a lot of these practices as crutches, something to hold us up from falling, because we feel like we're falling and we don't want to fall. And so we might partake in prayer, for example. We might begin praying a lot more when things are not going well. That should come as no shocker to anybody. If you pay attention, you'll notice this very quickly. That when your life is going well, if you're a member of a church, for example, when everything's going well, people kind of maybe pray less, or they pray differently. When things are going well, you might just kind of do the prayer as a way to just keep doing the practice, right? So God doesn't think that you're ignoring him or her or it or whatever you believe in. So you continue doing this practice because you know that at some point things are going to go badly. Now, you might not do this unconsciously, or consciously rather, but you know at some point things will go badly. And if you quit praying when times are good, God may not listen to you when times are bad. And when times are bad, you'll really need God's help. And of course, that's utter nonsense. It's utter nonsense. Now, we're not going to go into the nature of divinity in this episode, but keep the idea in the back of your mind that what you just thought about why you pray or don't pray, what I just said, makes no sense in a universe in which there is a higher power, an all-encompassing, all-knowing power, an eternal power, a loving power. That attitude makes no sense. That's the way that the universe is set up. Now, if you believe that there is a higher entity that created things, but it's a jealous entity, something that's to be feared, something that's to be worshipped, then you may need to take a step back and really begin to think about the nature of that thing, if that thing truly would be the one true God. Again, we're not going to talk on the specifics of divinity here. We're talking about how I've changed my practices. And so when I embarked on kind of this journey, one of the things, of course, that I brought in was meditation. I love meditation. I still do love meditation. I still find meditation useful. But the issue that came into my forethought is not that meditation isn't helpful or isn't good, but that oftentimes I use meditation as a crutch, just like I used psychedelics as a crutch. It's been a little over 6 months now, probably 6.5 months, almost 7 months, since I've used any psychedelics, and that's on purpose. At the beginning of the year, I made a conscious decision to do one final experiment, and then I would take 6 months off, just to see what would happen. Because I felt like I was getting to a point with my kind of ritualistic use of psychedelics that I knew that, you know, every 6 weeks I would do this, and this would be my ritual, and I would kind of expect an outcome. And when I realized that, I realized I was doing the same thing for other practices, like meditation. I have to stop what I'm doing. I have to do my, you know, 15-minute, 30-minute, an hour meditation. Sometimes longer, depends. And again, I still love doing it. I really enjoy doing Tummo, doing the breathwork meditation as well. It's one of my favorite things, but the problem again became that I was using that as a crutch and not as a tool of realization. I was directly identifying with the practice, and therefore I was losing any possible benefit from it. So I decided to take a break from the meditation. And once I took the break from the meditation, what I realized is this, that I don't need to set aside a time to do my meditation, that I should approach the way that I navigate the world itself as a meditation. Now, last year I talked quite a bit about this focus meditation that I do by staring at my hand. Still one of my favorite practices. I know some of you had tried it. Some of you had great results with it. Some of you just don't get it, and that's fine. It might not be the practice for you. I still love it. I still love it. If you do it, and you do it constantly, and you do it genuinely, you can literally feel the experience of what it feels like to be God in your hand. Very simple exercise, but it's very difficult, right? Because you're looking at a mundane thing like your hand. As if doing a focused meditation by staring at a candle is any better. But traditionally, that's an object that's used, a little physical candle. Once you get more advanced, you can kind of do this projection type focused meditation where you imagine the candle in your mind's eye. But it's much easier to just focus on a physical object because we're still physical beings. And so even though I haven't set aside the time to do my meditations, I still find myself doing my meditations all the time. Another great exercise that I love, and my wife hates it when I do this. My wife thinks it's the silliest thing that, for example, let's say I'll make a bowl of pasta, right? And you have to boil the water and put the pasta in for a few minutes. And one thing that I really enjoy, I love cooking, but one thing that I've really enjoyed one day just randomly while making a pot of spaghetti was using the act of making the spaghetti itself as a meditation. And so it might seem silly, and again, my wife thinks it's very silly, that I would simply stare directly into the pot of water and watch the steam come off of it, watch the bubbles begin forming and begin rolling and bubbling over. sticking the pasta in and seeing how through the cooking process, the form of the thing that you're making changes. It seems silly, but you can have some profound realizations by sometimes doing very silly, simple things. And you begin to take this approach to the way that you kind of live your life and go through all the things that you go through on a day-to-day basis. That's when you really begin to understand the purpose of spirituality. And so I'm always very careful when I talk about terms like spirituality or God or things like that to refrain from putting in some of the inherent meaning behind some of these words. In particular, because within organized religion and many New Age circles and things like that, we often get away from the purpose of the practice itself and get really, really deep into the realm of imagination. Now, imagination is useful. It sets us apart from many other living things. It has allowed us to create the world in which we live. Some of you may feel like that's a terrible thing. Maybe we should get rid of imagination if that's the case. Some of you may really enjoy that. Some of you may not care. I'm kind of in the realm of not care. And it's a tough place to be in sometimes because sometimes you go about your life doing things in a particular way and people feel like you simply don't care about maybe a particular person or your job or your financial situation, your school situation, or whether somebody got sick or somebody died or any of these things. And that's tough for a lot of people to understand. And it's also a tough place to be in when you can get to a state where you're being non-being, where you're simply isness. And it's not that those things don't matter, but you have a new perspective on them where you realize that's just simply the way things have come to be. Now, if a parent dies or a child dies or a grandparent, whatever, if somebody dies, it doesn't mean don't be upset. Of course you can be upset. Part of being a human being is to have emotion and to experience the emotion. But also part of a human being is not letting that emotion take over who you are. Just like you shouldn't let any other experience, including something like meditation or prayer, take over who you are and dictate who you are. Because when you quit using that as simply a way to experience yourself and the world around you, then it's no longer a tool. It's no longer useful. Then it simply becomes an idol, something that you worship in order to hopefully achieve some particular purpose. That's why I always love using a lot of Buddhist quotes on the podcast. You know, there's the one that I really like, when you meet the Buddha in the woods, kill him. What the hell does that mean, right? Well, there's many different meanings to it, but this is one of them. This is one of them. Don't get muddled in the imagination that one day you'll achieve enlightenment or your spirit will return to the Pleroma or you'll live in a gold mansion in heaven forever with 72 virgins and whatever other stories we tell each other about what happens afterwards. We're so focused about what happens after we're gone that we don't focus at all on what's directly in front of us. And see, that's the true purpose of meditation. Meditation isn't a way to better yourself. Because if you don't know how to meditate, it's not going to help you. And not only that, you have to think of the fact that there's nothing for you to improve anyway. Now, you may not feel that way when you feel like your life sucks, when you have no understanding, when some of the things that I talk about on the show, for example, just go directly over your head. And you feel like maybe I should do whatever Martin's doing. Let me copy his meditation. Let me copy his psychedelic rituals. Let me copy whatever other practice he has to see if I can see things the way that Martin sees them. Or whoever, whatever other person you want to put in there. Maybe a local church leader or some monk that you met on the street. Maybe you ran into a Hare Krishna or something, walking by somewhere. Maybe you like that and you wanna imitate that, and you imitate the practices. See, when you're doing that, you've already lost. You've already lost. Because everything that you're going to find it within yourself. So inherently, that thing is already inside you. Now, the realization goes a little bit deeper, of course. There's a terrific quote from Dogen, the Zen master. If you haven't checked out the works of Dogen, by all means. But he talks about this idea of kind of dissolving yourself in duality. And he says, opposites of dualities are not obliterated or even blurred. They are not so much transcended as realized. The absolute freedom in question here is that freedom which realizes itself in duality, not apart from it. And of course, I talk about duality and non-duality a lot because I really enjoy Vedantic philosophy. And that's something that really speaks to me. And through my own personal experiences, is something that I have determined to be true. But see, the problem oftentimes with sticking to a particular belief system and encountering someone that believes the opposite, for example, you have this inherent need to prove to the other that your point of view is correct. And of course, that's not true at all. As long as you prevent yourself from dissolving into the inherent duality. Because I can easily say every single episode that you are it, all of it. You're the person listening to this podcast and this delicious cup of tea that I have with me today. I'm drinking some Irish breakfast tea. It's one of my favorite teas. And I do it super boring. No milk, no sugar, nothing. Just the tea. You're your cat and your dog. You're your mother. You're your father. You're your son, your daughter. You're your boss. You're a coworker, you're it, you're all of it. Because all the experiences that you have are directly influenced by the way that you perceive them. And see, the problem is we get stuck in this world of imagination where we want to feel like we're improving ourselves, right? The self-improvement thing is huge. We feel like there's something wrong with us, we have to improve it. How do we improve it? Let's copy a practice. Because this person seems important, they say it works, so let's try it. And you try it and you try it and you go nowhere. You go nowhere. I always found that rather interesting. And if you're a Buddhist, by all means, I'm sure you won't be upset when I say this. Unless you're extremely dogmatic. But, you know, one of the things about the Buddha that he found, the way he found the middle way, is he realized that the existing ways weren't working, right? You couldn't be a hedonist and achieve nirvana, and you couldn't be an ascetic and achieve nirvana, so there had to be somewhere in the middle that led you to achieve realization. And in many ways, that's true, he did. He did find that realization. But then people came afterwards and tried to, I guess in essence, you can say make a business out of it. That's basically what religion is taking mystical universal truths and turning them into exploits for people to continue espousing a belief. This is where you can get to the idea of mimetics. I love mimetics. It's a fascinating area of study, particularly in the world today where everything appears to be a meme. But in many ways, the idea of mimetics is very similar to genetics. That's why the word sounds so similar. It was purposely coined that way. Because one thing that living organisms do is they want to propagate their species, right? You want to pass down your genetic material so you have the next generation. And in much the same way, memes do the same thing. They spread like viruses and take hold of people's minds, so that the idea may be propagated, not in a physical sense, but in a mental sense. And that's generally the problem that I have with organized modern religion. And I'm sure that has been the case for many, many years. You know, there's this this idea that, you know, maybe like we should go back to shamanism. as if, you know, going back to shamanism would really make any difference. I mean, maybe in some ways it would. The way of the shaman is interesting. I've dealt with the way of the shaman quite a bit on the podcast. But there's always that little bit of ego, self-preservation, that kind of muddles things along the way. Because, of course, if religion and spirituality began as some sort of shamanic practice, then eventually it evolved to the more oppressive religious institutions that we've come across over the past several thousand years. Because there's nothing inherently bad about religion or spirituality in itself, but in the way that it is used as a tool to control others. And see, the same thing applies to any practice that you use on a daily basis. That doesn't mean that I still don't practice these things, but I try to practice them in a way where I dissolve myself into the duality of it. Just because ultimately, in essence, the universe is non-dual, as in there's no good, there's no evil, none of these things, or say it's not purely deterministic or encompassing free will. Go back to the previous episode and I talked about that. Even though these things are true in essence, on a higher level, on the plane of existence that we're in, the world is dual. It's comprised of opposites. And see, it has to be comprised of opposites, otherwise you couldn't experience the world. So see, there's nothing bad about duality either. You know that it's daytime outside because you experience nighttime. And so you know the difference between daytime and nighttime. You experience color for the same reason. Color gets broken up into a spectrum. You can experience, say, black and white, very simple, but then red and blue and yellow. And once you can experience these, you can experience combinations. So you can experience purples and oranges and pinks. So you can't completely disavow the dual nature of things. Just like you can't completely disavow any particular experience that you have. What you can do is just simply learn to experience that thing of itself. Experience its isness. And that's it. Not whatever feelings arise from you going through the experience. Those are not you. Those are external manifestations of whatever you're experiencing, whatever way the light and the sound and all the other inputs are going into your brain. That is not the thing you're experiencing. Just like the things that you experience are not necessarily you. And we're not going to talk about holism today, but it'll be a topic that we talk about. Because the idea of the sum of parts being greater than the parts themselves is rather interesting. And something that arises in every single system, whether it's organic and inorganic, whether it's mental or physical. And of course, religions and political systems, financial systems, all these things are all larger than the sum of their parts. And so one very simple question that I ask myself, and I always think of a Fight Club when I think of this idea, starts from asking myself kind of, where's my mind? You know that Pixie song? It's very popular. I guess it was in the 90s when Fight Club came out. I love that song. Pixie's great band. That might not be their best song, but it's probably the most popular. But have you ever wondered that question? Where is my mind? And I would say for the majority of you, you'll just simply say that's a stupid question. It's in my head. My mind is in my brain. How else am I going to experience things if not with my brain? And that may appear to be true, but have you really put some thought into it as to the essential truthiness of it? Because chances are, through most of your day, you don't think about where your thoughts are coming from, right? You're just walking down the street and thoughts pop into your head and they pop out of your head, and that's it. That's where your mind is. But then, you know, you step on a rock, and your attention shifts down to your foot. Now your foot hurts. So you say, oh, well, I can feel that, so maybe my mind's also in my foot. You know, there's some interesting research about the heart mind and the stomach mind, right? There's a lot of research going on right now into the gastrointestinal system, how it's kind of like a second brain, or maybe even the primary brain, which would be interesting, right? A lot of our needs are predicated by our need to survive. And of course, eating and drinking is the number one thing you need to survive. So it's interesting to think about. Because really where your mind is really where your attention is. And so what you should be doing, instead of going after practices and trying to gain some experience out of it, gain some knowledge out of performing the thing, if you really truly feel like you need to find some way to improve yourself, what you should work on is your ability to understand and experience your awareness. There's a fascinating book called Awareness by Anthony DeMello. I've mentioned it many times. If you haven't picked it up, by all means, go read it. I'm not sharing affiliate links because I don't care about that stuff. But go check it out. It's a quick read. You can read it in one sitting. It's maybe 100 pages, 150 pages. It's based on a set of lectures that he did. And I've been wanting to do an episode on it for probably since the podcast started. And I just never really got a chance to. But I think, you know, once we start getting back into some of the topics that I wanted to discuss on the show, like Christian mysticism, we're going to probably do an episode on that book. And if you ever hear me say something like, though everything is a mess, all is well, that's a quote directly from that book. But awareness, that's the number one tool that you need. And so meditation can help you with awareness. It can help you become aware of sounds around you. It can help you become aware of how thoughts come in and out of your mind. Maybe you become aware of your breathing, of your blood flow. Some interesting things can happen when you begin focusing your awareness. And that's it's kind of one of these conundrums, this idea of focusing your awareness, because really what you want to do is unfocus your awareness. Unfocus your awareness. You want to go from having this this laser focus on things into kind of this very broad kind of like kind of the difference between, say, walking around at night with a flashlight and just waiting for the morning for the sun to come out. Okay, that's the difference in the level of awareness that you should try to achieve. Now, you can get along just perfectly fine walking around with the flashlight. Now, you might trip over things every so often. That's possible. Because, of course, you can't see everything, right? The light is very focused on a flashlight. But if you wait for the sun to come up, you have this very large object illuminating everything around you. And so meditation gave you little glimpses of this thing. But when you begin expanding your awareness, when you focus it to become less focused, is when you begin to realize you don't need a lot of these tools. You don't need to schedule your 30 minutes of meditation because you're meditating the entire day. And those of you that have gotten glimpses of things during meditation or prayer or dancing, I've done a bit of whirling over the last few months. It's been rather interesting. Again, not a practice I'm doing currently, but it is one that I tried. And I can see why the Sufis do it. It's wonderful. It's very liberating. But it's just a tool. And why should I set aside, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to whirl when I can just be dancing around all day? When I can be doing my meditation all day? And see, then you begin to achieve some real peace. Some real peace. And you no longer need to wait for this experience to come about for you to achieve that. Now, of course, I'm not saying that you should quit doing whatever you're doing. I'm not saying that at all. If it's working for you, great. But what I am saying is that you should be continuously finding a way to involve the way that you're practicing in order to get to the next step, get to the next level. And you're never going to reach the last level, right? You're never going to fight the final boss. There is no final boss. There's always going to be another final boss. But the more tools that you have, the more aware you become of how to handle these situations, the more at peace you become. So this year I started a new job, and I have a lot of people under me. I have 40 people that report directly to me. And then there's roughly another 30 that I indirectly manage. And I hear it all the time. You know, I'm so great, can I get a raise? Of course, not in those words. But that's basically the way that it comes off. Look at the thing that I did. Can I get some more money for it? Because see, a lot of times people think, well, you know, if I make more money, I'll feel more comfortable. I'll have less stress in my life because I know I can pay my bills. And of course, this is true. Trust me, I've been in a place in my life, many, many years of my life, where I didn't know how I would pay my rent or my car, pay for food, any of these things, right? There was a time where I lived literally on ramen noodles for at least a year, probably more. And so I don't want to seem like I'm coming up from some place of privilege, because I've been to that place. I've lived that experience. I'm very well aware of what it feels like. But I also made a decision not to live that way. And so, yes, having the extra money is nice, but it's not always the thing that will really give me the peace. Now, in some ways, working on this awareness is similar to amassing some kind of financial wealth, right? You expand your coffers of experience, of awareness. And then things literally just come in and out. You know, there's that term FU money. I don't know if you've ever heard that terminology. I'm not going to explain it. Go look it up if you've never heard it. But there's a term FU money, which, I mean, basically, you have so much money that you can tell anybody you want to F you. Okay? Get out of my face. Now, the attitude, I don't necessarily agree with. But you can kind of do this with awareness, where you can get to a place in your life experience where you are so inherently aware of every object, person, thing, place, event that you experience that it doesn't faze you in any way. Now, oftentimes you have to amass experience to achieve that awareness. And so that's what I meant earlier when I say, you know, a lot of the things that I've talked about on the podcast, I can now say to me are true, that I believe and know for a fact to be true, instead of something that I hope it's true, that I'll talk about, that I'll try to make sense of, because I was met with obstacles that tested the theory that I had, and the theory proved to be true. Again, this is not true for everything that I've believed to be true, but for a lot of things, and some things that I knew not to be true 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I now know 1,000,000% to be true. Like, for example, the existence of a divine thing in the universe, right? The Bethos, so I keep calling it. Because you guys know I love Gnosticism. The Bethos. And so that's really, ultimately, the biggest change for me. The biggest change for me is not relying on all these tools to try to make myself feel better for whatever is going on. Where I don't need to spend the, you know, 15, 30 minutes of respite in a quiet place in a dark room enjoying my meditation, because I'm just constantly floating around from one experience to the next, not attaching myself to any of them. That's the key. And that's the biggest change for me. We'll wrap this one up here. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, Twitter is always a good place. I'm not on social media much right now, but I'll slowly be returning to that But shoot me a message. It might take me a week or so to get back to you on there, but I will. It's at Mind Alchemical. You can email. Email is martin@thealchemicalmind. And yeah, check out the Patreon if you'd like, patreon.com/thealchemicalmind. There's a Discord. You can find the links to all that stuff on thealchemicalmind.com. And that'll wrap it up for this episode. I'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. Thank you all for listening. And of course, as always, remember that you are it. All of it.